reach the point that the previous person talked about, and that we really need to resolve if we want to move forward. And it's a question of values. How do we deal with the values of the societies? And that's why we will talk about two points: coastal floodings, uncertainties, and climate change. So the work that we share here with you today comes from the European project TESEUS. TESEUS is a project about innovative technologies for safer European coasts in changing climate. I say that because it's important for us to reach the core of the European Commission. Because if not, what we do with all of this work? So the point here is the largest integrated project funded by the European Commission and evolved from three main observations. Climate change is increasing the frequency and severity of flooding and erosion events, while socioeconomic change are increasing the assets. Historic approach to managing this risk are inconsistent with the Habitats Directive, as they maintain human safety and the expense of coastal habitats. And Europe has not yet developed an integrative approach for the assessment and management of this growing erosion and flood risk that address the multiple human and environmental challenge. So with these points, I'm leading the work package four. This package is called Impact Mitigation, Society and Economy. Our experiments reach the core of the project, and we bring social science into a context often, I must say too often, structured by 18th century engineering inertias. And I say that because for us, as I previously say, it's important that our results have a consequence in the European Commission. And the consequence here will be in the new directive, flood directive, another directive from the European Commission. So we develop the contributions of social science into a portfolio of tested operational innovative tools to be used for policy creation and the management of coastal flooding risk in the context of climate change, paying special attention to 4 points. So the impact on urbanization and spatial planning, the damage to business and recovery, the post-crisis response, and the risk communication and science for building resilience in the context, I repeat, of climate change. So 4 points in order to provide homogeneous methodologies to evaluate direct and indirect damage into the coastal zones. As you know, more of the 60% of the population today is living in those coastal zones. So to explore coastal flooding risk perception in study sites in the context of climate change by local communities and by different groups of stakeholders involved in flood mitigation planning and dissemination of knowledge, and most important, to relate social risk perception to community resilience. So with these elements in mind, three years ago, we started working on social risk perception in several study sites in Europe. So focusing on stakeholder interviews and focus group. Field work was conducted in the coastal city of Santander, so in the Cantabric Sea in the north of Spain, in the Gironde estuary, the biggest estuary in Europe, in France, in the coastal city of Cesanatico, a little bit south to Venice, and in the Hel Peninsula in Poland, so a little bit west to Gdansk, from which, where this picture comes. So for each of these study sites, we conduct semi-structured interviews and focus groups. You know, all of you are related with these approaches. And in-depth thematic coding was conducted with Atlas Pantai using predefined and emerging thematic categories. An initial theorization using grounding theory was conducted on these corpuses using the results of the initial theorization. A second iteration of theorization was then conducted. But before I dive in the details of this fieldwork, I will introduce a keyword because I think it's clear that we need to clarify the word risk. And there's a lot of effort in this climate to clarify this word risk. What do we mean by risk? If we really want to be challenged with the climate consensus, let's read a little bit about risk. And to read, this piece of work is a part of a paper, so I used these 2 days to improve this paper and to move forward, trying to finish this the next week. So take these words as a piece of a paper, and please don't hesitate say, ah, this part is not clear, and so that's why I prefer to read than to make an improvisation. So risk, as you know, it's a mental model. Part of this model is linked with reality, and it may manifest itself. Other will associate a probability density function with the description of an event, and part is linked with the way individual and society frame this manifestation. So some may call these consequences. By framing, we mean here how individuals talk about and then assess risk, taking into account contextual elements that seems neither directly linked with the probabilistic nature of the risk nor with its consequences. This framing leads to situations where risk assessment by expert and risk assessment by layperson lead to dissonant conclusions that may lead to suboptimal behaviors, ill-designed and not well-accepted risk management options. Well, I realize that there's a lot of literature about risk, and I will not read all of this, but just to be clear, the purpose of our risk perception analysis is to contribute to the robustness of risk analysis and to the resiliency of risk management solutions that may be offered. So rather than design another standard risk perception study using overused and abused theoretical and empirical approaches, we choose to start from Brent's theoretical synthesis and grow it into the experience of flooding and erosion by key individuals and general population in study sites. So this will be our starting point, sorry. So we will therefore focus on the idea that coastal flooding and erosion risk under climate change is to be approached so through the analysis of the relevance, evidence, and normative claims that captures the various determinants of perception. The goal in this risk perception study is therefore to understand how those affected by flooding and erosion risk in a changing climate theorize the risk they are facing. And this point illustrates a few dimensions. We are working with a double layer of uncertainty. First, as Theseus, so the project, is dealing with the change associated with climate change, current practices are not sufficient to assess relevance. Second, because Theseus is an agent of change through the development of innovative management strategies and technology, relevance in terms of trade-offs, will be changed. So, as a producer of knowledge rooted in science, Theseus will unavoidably generate knowledge base that will differ from the knowledge base of stakeholders. This has two important consequences for us, and I think for the European Commission too. First of all, the building of knowledge by this project will somehow need to be integrated with collective and individual heuristic of stakeholders. And the second, the tools, technological or governance developed by Theseus, by the European Commission too, will need to take into account this integration explicitly for future applications. And we reach here the point of the values that the previous person talk about. Envisioning and developing governance and technological options for safer European coasts, there will be necessary raise questions of resource distribution, who will benefit from these tools, and questions of redistributions. Some of these tools may create perception of gains and losses. Furthermore, through the erosion and other phenomena related to climate change, control mechanisms are rooted in history and as such in culture. And we arrive to the point, technological options may therefore be preferred not on technological or economical ground, but simply because they are valued in terms of historical acceptation. So finally, flood and erosion mitigation options do interact strongly with nature and landscape. Thinking with relationship between human activity, nature, and landscape has a huge potential of raising concern rooted in local values. And as you know, these local values, normative claims, seem unresolved. We will discuss this point later on the slide 7, the slide that will come. In generic terms, what we propose is that the participants to the stakeholder interviews and to the focus group be the same person with the following characteristics: land use planner for risk management. Okay, you know all of these categories, so I will not spend time with you on these categories. But what is clear is that this sampling is adapted to local specificities, and these people have been identified and mobilized by the study site champions and commit themselves to participating to at least two focus groups and one interview. In the general estuary, the representatives from the following structure types were interviewed: Applied Research Center, Environmental NGO, Regional Government Technical Department for Environmental Planning, Harbor Authority, Food Management Coordinating Body, Erosion Control Regional Body, and so on. In Santander, the representative from the following structures, so River Basin Authority, Land Use Planner, Environmental Planner, City Council, Minister of Environment at regional level, Flood Risk Manager, dealing with social and sportive activities in the harbor, Harbor Administration, Harbor User, Coastal Manager at the national level, Coastal Manager at regional level, Industry Chamber, and so on, sorry. So, in Tisanatico, something close to this category too. And what is important here is that the semi-structured interview framework is designed to elicit information about the way stakeholders frame the issue at hand. So this framework was therefore designed as a set of broad questions that are complemented by a set of prompts that are to be used in the information, if the information, sorry, has not been given with the answers to the broad question. So the use of the question and the quotes has to be systematic of coherence of purpose. What is more, the analytical choice that are made, either thematic analysis or grounded theory, calls for allowing as much latitude in the response as possible. This framework is not designed to get together only factual, concrete information, but how the study site is designed to capture the stakeholders and resident perception and social constructs of the risk issue at hand. So all interview and focus group have been recorded, a verbatim transcription of the interview of the focus group have been done in the original languages. That's why this this limitation in languages appear here today, so sorry about that, I guess you follow. And this corpus has been coded thematically, analyzed using a dialogue approach to ground the theory. So the following primary code have been used. So the relevance claim, quotes, where the interviewee seems to state what is a phenomenon that is worth attention. Evidence claims, quotes, where the interviewee seems to establish causal linkage related to cost of flooding or erosion. And last of them, normative claims, quotes, where the interviewee seems to state what is good, acceptable, and tolerable regarding coastal erosion and flooding risk management options. So the key consideration that must be introduced here is the qualitative nature of the corpus needed and the analysis that needs to be conducted. Capturing risk perceptions cannot and should not, for the purpose of operational risk governance, be conducted in quantitative terms. This basically means that governance choice, and therefore technological choice, must be centered on giving the opportunity for all the stakeholders to express their relevance, evidence, and normative claims. This basically may mean that any decision support system that is developed by the European Commission will have to contain possibilities for deliberative work, governance at all of the stages. So the results that emerged quite robustly across these interviews are the following. Participants associate risk with the modified state of the receptor or the consequence of flooding and erosion. This is the first of the. Very seldom do participants mention the probabilistic nature of flooding and erosion risk. It seems, therefore, safe to consider that for interviewees in the Santander, Tesenatico, Gironda, and Polish coast, risk is equal to consequences. When the probabilistic nature of flood and erosion risk is mentioned, it's only as part of an evidence claim, associated with exposure or overexposure by living or having an economic activity on either the pathway or the receptor. This is a quite important result for us because one of initial cognitive drivers of this work lies in the fact that because of climate change, the probabilistic density function of extreme events will be modified. This means that If one wants to contribute to save a European cause to deploy itself in society and policymaking, it will be of paramount importance to convey the probabilistic nature of flooding and erosion risk in a changing climate through public deliberation. So, in general terms, our analysis of the interview's corpus shows that relevance is established by the interviews through a mix of expert-based knowledge and personal heuristic. Yet, interviews generally express the fact that pertinence is proxied by actual current investment in risk mitigation, and that investment decisions are driven by a mix of technocratic and economic considerations feeding political decisions that are themselves mostly run by normative claims. When pushing the analysis further, relevance claims made were essentially presented as conditional to policy decisions for which the key determinant identified was congruence with the normative claims expressed by stakeholders. Stakeholders meet voters in this case. In terms of evidence claims, our results allows for two levels of analysis regarding perception. These are associated with the three following questions. What are, according to interviewees, the cause and effects of flooding? What is the interviewee's basis for their belief on the cause and effects of flooding? And what is the interviewee's basis to apprehend the probabilistic nature of flood? In all study sites all around Europe, interviewees stress the importance of individual and collective behaviors as the main cause of vulnerability to past flood events. This is an extremely important result for us because meteorology, local topography, and the likes are not seen as the main cause of vulnerability. Human behavior is. When attributing floods to behavior, interviewees stress the impact of human activities on either flood management infrastructures, interfering with dikes, storm sewer, and likes, or with sensitive habitats, sand dunes mostly, and floodplains to a lesser extent. Furthermore, interviewees stress the fact that one's mitigation strategy may have a distant effect on others. Rising grounds increase flooding risk on non-raised grounds. Breakwater through change in sedimentary dynamics leads to erosion-based flood elsewhere, and so on. So, when considering individual behaviors, in the context of evidence claims, interviewees do mention overexposure. It's only framing as a part of normative claims. At a more collective level, within evidence claims, the interviewees identify design policies in terms of governance process, mostly poor land use planning, for example, real estate developments below sea level, administrative segmentation, for example, different beaches, replenishing procedure in adjoining municipalities, and lack of administrative coordination, building permits that are turned down at the local level, then given at a regional level. Absurd engineering infrastructures, flood gates that have never been functioning properly, and funding. Basically, when considering the cause of flooding, risk participants identify a critical lack of risk governance, not a lack of knowledge. So we consider in the knowledge base that may be mobilized within evidence claims, participants stress the importance of individual and collective heuristic. I repeat, but for participants, the normative claims seem unresolved because interviewees state that the science that is available solves problems of scale. Available evidence concerns areas that are too small to be representative of flood event at risk management scale. The interviewees, they state that the complexity of flood dynamics cannot possibly be captured by science at its practices. And they state that floods are multifactorial events where the human factor is very rarely recognized. And last of these reasons, in some instances, there are clear statements where criticized engineering options are associated with science-biased knowledge, thus disqualifying the latter for the interviewees. Finally, the probabilistic nature of floods is very seldom mentioned by the interviewee. The potential change in flood probabilities induced by climate change are almost totally absent from the interviewee's statement. Normative claims were at the core of the interviewee's statement, very briefly said as a conclusion, the result saw the following line of thought that clearly dominates. A, risk management is a political decision. B, political authorities will only move if their move is accepted by the affected population or by the affected economic agents. C, acceptability is contingent upon the redistribution nature of the decision to be made. Next one, coastal flooding boils down to the acceptability in terms of norms of the option envisioned. And E, in the end of the risk may very well not be managed in a way that makes sense in terms of increased safety. This causal change manifests itself when putting in balance the collective benefits and individual losses of a risk management option. Normatively, it was clearly expressed that the only acceptable way to envision coastal risk entails considering risk management option where the cost of flooding risk and management option is borne collectively, even if the assets protected benefits to a minority. Furthermore, risk management strategies that are good collectively cannot really be implemented if they are individual interests. Analyzing this line of discourse shows that this rule suffers one exception. If the overexposure population choose overexposure in order to reap benefits that are seen as exaggerated by the interviewees, for example, high value seafront real estate development clearly below sea level, then no public money should be spent on managing the risk they are exposing themselves to. In all study sites, it appears that resolving conflicting normative claims are at the core of the process of envisioning flooding risk. This is critical for the purpose of contributing to safer costs. Any risk mitigation option that will be developed will necessarily pass through a deliberation process regarding its acceptability, potentially regardless on the scientific quality of the knowledge that generates this mitigation option. These results show that there seems to be very little space in the public and stakeholder attitudes and perceptions for science-based knowledge. On the other hand, the knowledge used to frame risk belongs to the world of individual and collective experience. Values and norms occupy most of the cognitive space when framing risk. The risk perception analysis represented here sheds a light on the path to follow in order to contribute to safer coasts in Europe, From the analysis conducted, it appears that first and foremost, the flooding perception of the stakeholders is ruled by considerations that have very little to do with the authors and associated probabilities themselves as fragmented with the scientific community dealing with current and future coastal risk. For local stakeholders, risk management is mostly associated with the ability to make decisions that are compatible with the core value of the affected communities. This has a consequence that any initiative to reduce risk that is not co-constructed with the affected community will most likely not be implemented for the reasons that have nothing to do with the quality of the knowledge base that is mobilized. What is even more challenging is that in some cases, this heuristic leads risk stakeholders to a genuine mistrust of science-based or engineering-based approaches. What we see from these results is that for local communities, if a solution is to be found to overexpose to flooding risk, is to be found in better risk governance rooted in explicit taking into account of the values expressed by potential flood victims. And to conclude, in more general terms, our results show that if science-based knowledge is to have its place in climate change coastal risk governance, it's of critical importance that its production take place in a process that allows for consistent interaction with those at risk and their values. If science-based knowledge is to be a solution to the problem of misperception, then a particular care will have to be given on the way that science is practiced. So that's all what I want to share with you today. Thank you very much.
So, as I asked it from others, I will also now take the role of discussing this paper, which was very fascinating to read. And I think it's, despite the fact that it's about adaptation and about risk management, it is completely in line with some of the questions we are asking ourselves here. So it is about public uptake of knowledge, and it is about the way also, of course, climate science circulates and makes sense in decision making. When I read your paper, here you didn't mention it really, you said that you are drawing on an approach of risk management, which is the approach of Uli Rehn, and I remember well, and I looked it up because I didn't know it. And so what he proposes essentially is to break up the risk analysis, risk management framework that follows a very linear model, which is knowledge and then action. And because he says it doesn't work, or the group that is doing this says it doesn't work as soon as populations are involved. So by linking systematically population, perceptions, representations, values at all stages of the risk management process, he says we can move forward more appropriately. This is so essentially what you do, what you present, and that is very interesting. It linked up, or it rang a bell to me in one way, because when I was working on my PhD thesis, I was working on also extreme events. And extreme events are a very interesting point to analyze the climate change debate. So I looked at media, how media discuss extreme events. And this is not neutral, because in 2002, when I began my studies, there was a big flood in eastern Germany, so a centenary flood of the Oder, and some prominent climatologists claimed that this centenary event will now become decadal, so something that happened every 100 years will now happen every 10 years because of climate change. So this is a strong claim. It is an alarm. It was based on some evidence, because 1997 there had also been a very strong flood in the same region. And so what I was interested in, and that links up to what you said, was to look at three catastrophic events that took place in this in the beginning of the 2000s, which was this flood in eastern Germany, the heat wave in France in 2003, that led to much discussion about how it is related to climate change, and Katrina in the US. And what emerged when you look at the media treatment of these events and after discussions they spurred, and I was surprised to find that, is that media treatment, or what people talk about, is very little about climate change. It is, of course, much more about national solidarity and about the way these events show how vulnerable populations are treated, how they are a sign of social inequality. And that made sense in very different terms. So in Germany, it was about East and West. So how is the solidarity between the new German lands, the Eastern, who were affected by the flooding, and the Western, richer lands organized? In France, it was about the old and the young. So the old generation, the elderly, that were left alone in their small fifth floor apartments in Paris, by the young that were going to the coast in southern France. And of course, in the US, it was about black and white, and about how the different regions of New Orleans were segregated and exposed to flooding differently depending on the population that lived there. So, what does this tell us? This tells us that it's not, you were not talking about skepticism. When I looked at, I didn't find skepticism, but it's about relevance. It's about public uptake of science. What, and I link this to what I said in my beginning talk about Brian Wynne, so misunderstood, misunderstanding, how institutions relate to how people make sense of knowledge. There were two papers recently that came out in 2010 of Sheila Jasanoff and Ulrich Beck. Sheila Jasanoff, A New Climate for Society, so where she points to the gap between a global and abstract knowledge and people's life world in the case of climate change. Ulrich Beck, who says in Climate for Change, or How to Create a New Green Modernity, that because of these gaps, and because of the way climate knowledge is framed, and because of the way people make sense of knowledge, we don't have grassroots action. We don't have, and this concerns, of course, he's more concerned about mitigation, but I think it concerns adaptation just as well. So following from this, three very short questions. When we talk about this uptake of knowledge, you finally, you conducted a lot of interviews, and what I hear from your interviews is that climate change knowledge did not play any role for these people that you interviewed. Well, I'm kind of surprised still, even if I understand. I mean, these are coastal populations.
But
How, perhaps a little more detail, what was the relevance, or do you have any evidence of the relevance of this kind of knowledge for these populations you interviewed? Second, of course, your method of taking into account and what you say evidence claims of populations is very convincing and very necessary in risk management. But one question I would raise is, in what way is it adapted to a changing environment? Which means that with climate change, we have environments that are changing, that are about to change. And so what do you do about experience when this experience might not fit to the world of tomorrow, because it's based on past experiences. And the last one, of course, I was very struck by your last phrase. So if science-based knowledge is to be a solution to the problem of misperception, then a particular care will have to be given to the way science is practiced. Great. Tell us how.
Thank you, Stefan. Okay. So the answers are in this picture. This picture is from Santander in the north of Spain. And this paper is addressed to engineering corpus in front of us. So we are more or less four or five people working on social science. And in front, we have 200 engineer people. So when I say science, take care of the way that you do, I'm talking with people from engineers. So I'm not talking from climate scientists, or I'm not talking with climatologists. That's the, just to be clear on this, on the context of the discourse. For example, this, so the city of Santander, So in the city of Santander, the waves come clearly from the north. So we have here waves of 3 meters coming from the north. The population say, okay, we don't really care about these waves because we are used to deal with them. And so if we imagine climate change, new conditions, and we agree with the mainstream, what is interesting because it's a conservative city with Santander, you know, the Bank of Santander and so on. So they agree with the mainstream of climate change, but they say, we don't care about these waves coming from the north. what we really care is of the wind coming from the south and injecting in the bay. So this is the population speech. When you talk with engineers from the university in Santander, somewhere in the middle of this valley, they say, okay, we are really interested in put concrete in the north side of the city because economical arguments. So the question is there. The society managed to deal with natural events, extreme events, and the people who are recognized as scientists in this context, they put attention in other point. So that's, I don't know, clarify a little bit your question.
Hello. It's a small question. The stakeholders you considered, did you choose to interview also the insurance sector? Hmm. Because the methods are very often scientifically based.
Yes, I don't mention it, but there's a full part of the work package on insurance. So yes. Okay, we too.